All right, that's a scene from our cleanup day. There were a few of us out there, and you can't really tell. The only person you can tell is, I guess you can tell that's Andres. But believe it or not, that is Brianna. Yeah. That's Brianna. And that's me pulling a trash. And there's a tent for a homeless person. And that's cool because that guy said, no, don't clean up my stuff. I'll clean it up myself. And so we gave him the trash bags and he cleaned up his whole area and he put them out on the street there. So that was kind of cool, I guess, you know. Sure, it was great. It's hard work though, I'm telling you. Those 80-pound bags, putting them into a dumpster. Yeah, Ken, Jan, Malcolm, it's good. We also did food distribution at St. Patrick's on Friday. It was great, a lot of fun. But we're here this morning to worship God. We're also kind of celebrating the Public Day's anniversary. That's a cool thing. And Tiani's birthday, except we don't see Tiani here, but, you know, we're celebrating her birthday, which is actually today. So, we did a series of, I believe it's 9 sermons from the book of Exodus, and now we're doing Leviticus. And there's, speaking of Leviticus, there's Isaiah. That's another book in the Bible. Woo. Welcome, Isaiah.
Hey, what's up, man?
So anyway, our theme passage from Leviticus, anybody remember?
Yes.
You do? Oh, that's nice. I'm glad to know you remember. Do you remember it enough to? 11:45. Leviticus 11:45, which says, I'm the Lord who brought you out of Egypt to be your God. Therefore, be holy. Because I'm holy. So Leviticus is about essentially achieving holiness, all right? About being separate from the world and joined with God, all right? Then we had that's our theme verse, right? I'm the Lord who brought you out of Egypt to be your God, therefore be holy because I'm holy. Then we have our outline of Leviticus. We spent 2 weeks looking at the sacrifices, the offerings and the sacrifices. And then we're spending a couple weeks looking at the priesthood. And then we're going to spend some time looking at the law. We already did a whole series on the festivals as well as the tabernacle. Okay? And so last week we talked about the priesthood. And we saw that the priestly class, if you will, the kind of the whole priesthood thing in Israel, divided up into 4 categories, I guess you could call it. First was the Levites, all right, and the Levites were the ones who were not to give offerings and sacrifices. They simply served, moving stuff around and changing things and all this sort of stuff. They served. And so the Levites are not foreshadows of anything particular in the New Testament, but then there's the priests, the children of Aaron, the Kohens, if you will. Those are the ones who made offerings and sacrifices. And those priests are prefigures, if you will, of us, right? Because we saw in Exodus 19:6, God's vision, his prophecy, that we would be a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. So, in looking at the Aaronic priesthood, the children of Aaron, the ones who actually made those sacrifices and offerings, we learned something about ourselves. So, the priests then, the Aaronic priests, were both sacrifice makers and interceders. So they made sacrifices to God, but then they interceded with God for us. And there's a sense in which we are those things, although actually, as priests, as New Testament priests, we don't make sacrifices. Jesus did that, got it covered. But we make those offerings. Remember the grain offering and the fellowship offering and the burn offering and the drink offering? That's pretty cool stuff. And then also, we're not interceders for each other, right? Flo, do you need somebody to intercede between you and God?
No.
Who do you have for that? Jesus, right? We saw in 1 Timothy chapter 2 that there's one God, one mediator between you and God, the man Jesus Christ. But we do serve as mediators, correct?
Yes.
We saw that in Romans 15, verse 6. So, what we learned, I can't remember if I have a slide on this one. Yes, things we learned about our priesthood, if you will, from looking at the Levitical priesthood. We saw that we must honor and obey God's word, right? Remember what happened to Nadab and Abihu? That wasn't so great because they didn't honor God's word. We must distinguish between the holy and the unholy. And we are the ones to reveal the difference between the holy and the unholy to the world. All right, we're devoted to God, right? They didn't have any inheritance in the land, unlike all the other Israelites. Their only inheritance was God. And that tells us as priests, we are children of heaven. Our citizenship is in heaven. And another thing we saw, they had all these rules, just pages of rules about how to maintain holiness or separation from the things of the world and to teach others to do that, like the Zadokites. Remember those Zadokites? And last of all, we saw that our priestly duty is not to intercede for each other, but is to intercede for the Gentiles, bring them to God. Okay? But then I said the third, so there's the Levites, the priests of Aaron, then there's the high priest. I said we're going to talk about this week, so we will. And so the priests are prefigures of us as priests, but then we're not high priests. Our high priest is Jesus. So unlike last week where we learned about what we're supposed to be doing, sort of, this week we're going to learn about what Jesus is doing. So last week was more of a challenging sermon. This week is more of an encouraging sermon because we're finding out what Jesus is doing for us. There might be some challenge in there, but it's primarily for encouragement. Amen? You like encouraging sermons? Hopefully it will be. If I do a good job, it will. So we have the Levites. I can't remember. Did I have a slide about? Yeah, we have the Levites, the Aaronic priesthood, prefigures of us. Then there's the high priest, right? And we'll learn a little bit about that. And then there's the priesthood of Melchizedek. And I wanted to cover that this week. But the sermon would get too long. So I don't know. Maybe we'll do that next week. I don't know. That's sort of cool stuff. All right, so what we're going to do then is we're going to start in Leviticus 21. So there's in Leviticus 21, the first 9 verses are essentially rules or regulations for priests, right? And that was from last week. Then starting in verse 10 is regulations for the high priest. And we're going to find out the high priest had a much higher standard of things they had to do. Leviticus 21, 10 through 12. Now, we're getting into the weeds a little bit, all right? Remember, in Leviticus, you get into some weeds about, you know, the fat between the kidney and the sort of things like that. But understand that these are about us. They're about our relationship with God. They're about Jesus. So if you understand that, the weeds will not... Well, we were in the weeds yesterday, weren't we? There were a lot of weeds over there. That's right. The high priest, verse 10, the one among his brothers who has had the anointing oil poured on his head and who has been ordained to wear the priestly garments, which we'll learn about in a few minutes, must not let his hair become unkempt or tear his clothes. He must not enter a place where there is a dead body. He must not make himself unclean even for his father or mother. Nor shall he leave the sanctuary of his God or desecrate it, because he's been dedicated by the anointing oil of his God, I am the Lord. And we learn a lot about Jesus from these 3 verses. Of course, you probably knew it already, but it's sort of cool to read about it in the Old Testament. So some of the rules for the high priest. First of all, they were the ones who had been anointed. You know what that word is? It's Mashiach. They were the messiahs, if you will, the anointed ones. So right there, you see they're the ones that are serving as a prefigure of the Messiah. Number 2, there are a bunch of rules. I'm going to look mainly at the one about entering a room with a dead body. Now, it turns out priests could not enter the room of a dead body except for their family members and things like that. But the high priest could not be in the same room with a dead body at all, period. Not even if their mother or father died. Wow. All right? That seems like kind of a harsh rule. You mean you can't even attend the funeral of your parents? Yeah, that's right. That's correct. Because God wanted them to remain, you know, like Jesus said, let the dead bury their dead. The priest must be holy and no compromise at all, because the high priest needs to be perfect without sin. And then it says he can't even leave the tabernacle. The whole time he's the or the priest, you know, the temple grounds or whatever. So imagine that. You want to go on a vacation, the high priest? Nope. You want to take some time off, high priest? Nope. You want to, I don't know, go visit your friends? Nope, couldn't do it. Because you're the high priest. And that, again, tells us about Jesus, because where is Jesus? Jesus is in the real tabernacle, Hebrews chapter 9, the heavenly one. And he's there, he's on duty 24/7. So the high priest, unlike, by the way, the other priests, they had these 24 courses of priests. So every 6 months, roughly, they'd come and spend a week, you know, changing the bread and all that kind of, doing all that, the offerings and all that sort of stuff. And the other 23 weeks, they'd be off doing their own thing. All right? But the high priest, he's there all the time. I don't know if I really want that job. All right? That's a tough job. But again, we learn about Jesus who, you know, again, not touching a dead body, not even being in the same room with a dead body. In other words, keeping himself holy and separate from the things of the world. And number two, Jesus is always there in the heavenly tabernacle, 24/7, 365 and a quarter, the whole time. Then there's this section. I'm going to read Numbers 21, 16 through 23. Now, when I read this, you're going to go, that's kind of weird stuff. All right, but, okay, from our perspective in the 21st century, this is kind of strange, sort of, but you have to understand what it's telling us about the high priest and about Jesus. So I'm going to read verses 16 through 23. And again, I'm going to read it, going to go, that's sort of interesting. Here we go. The Lord said to Moses, say to Aaron, for the generations to come, none of your descendants who has a defect may come near to offer the food of his God. No man who has any defect may come near. No man who is blind or lame, disfigured or deformed. Now, from our perspective, this is kind of mean. I mean, we got the American with Disabilities Act. You know, in our culture, this would be not really even a good thing. You know, we would, but God understand what it's saying about the high priest. And what it's saying about Jesus as I read this. Okay, got it? So, no man who has any defect, I'm sorry, no man who is crippled in foot or hand, who is hunchbacked or dwarf, who has an eye defect or festering or running sores or never mind. Okay. No descendant of Aaron, the priest, who has any defect is to come near to present the food offerings to the Lord. He has a defect. He must not come near to offer the food of his God. He may not eat the most holy food of his God, as well as the holy food, yet because of his defect, he must not go near the curtain or approach the altar. Now, again, this is not about God hating people with disabilities, okay? This is about, remember, when they gave a lamb, it was to be an unblemished lamb, right? Without defect. And so this is about the fact that Jesus, our Messiah, is an unblemished sacrificial lamb. All right? So we learned a few things about the Messiah. First of all, he is Messiah. He's anointed. All right? And he is to separate himself from unclean things. And he is to intercede for us 24/7 in the temple. And he is to be completely without blemish of any sort. All right? Good. Next, another thing about the high priest, they had these weird clothing. I mean, there's, you know, again, if you read Leviticus, the ephod, anybody here ever worn an ephod? No. I didn't think so, okay. And, you know, turban, they got a turban thing. That's we think people from India wear turbans or something like that. All right, but all this tells us about Jesus. So bear with me. All right, so Exodus 28. By the way, some of this is in Leviticus, but the section in Exodus explains a little bit better. Okay? So let's go to Exodus 28. Exodus 28. All right, so the whole section about the garments. So, the high priest had special clothing that only the high priest wore. Because the high priest was the one who was making the offerings, the sacrifices for God that brought purity to the whole nation on the Day of Atonement, on Yom Kippur. So there's special stuff. So one thing that the high priest has is an ephod. Like I said, probably none of you have ever worn an ephod. I don't even know what an ephod exactly is, but it's some kind of a shirt thing or a, I don't know, something like that. So here we go, verse 6. Make the ephod of gold and of blue, which represents heaven, and of purple, which represents royalty. Oh, my watch found something on the web. Okay. It says about heaven. It's answering a question about heaven on my watch. Okay. And scarlet, representing blood. And of finely twisted linen, the work of skilled hands, is to have two shoulder pieces attached to two of its corners so it can be fastened. Its skillfully woven waistband is to be like it, of one piece with ephod made with gold, with blue, purple, scarlet yarn, and with finely twisted linen. Verse 9. Take two onyx stones and engrave on them the names of the sons of Israel. And then what it was is they had these two onyx stones, six tribes here, six tribes there. It's like, okay, what's that about? Well, it's about the fact that essentially Jesus is carrying us on his shoulders. And then they had this breast piece described in verse 15. Fashion a breast piece for making decisions. So the Urim and the Thummim are on there, and these 12 stones, okay? The work of skilled hands, make it like the ephod of gold, blue, purple, and scarlet, etc. And then they put 1, 2, 3, 4, is it in the picture? Yeah. 1, 2, 3, these precious stones, 12 of them, one for each tribe. So you got all 12 tribes up here, because Jesus is carrying us, and you got all 12 right here, tribes here, because we're on Jesus' heart. All right. So again, it's kind of weird stuff, but it's telling us about Jesus. Because Jesus in heaven, I don't think he's actually wearing an ephod. I don't think he's wearing an ephod up there. I think what is you children of Abraham are on his heart and he's carrying you. I think that's the symbolism of the ephod and the breastpiece. Verse 29. Whenever Aaron enters the holy place, he will bear the names of the sons of Israel over his heart on the breastpiece of decision as a continuing memorial before the Lord. And then there's the Urim and the Thummim, these kind of weird jewel things that are on there for making wise decisions because Jesus is the omniscient one who is interceding for us. All right, so the Urim and the Thummim, that's in verse 30. You can read about that. And then he's got a turban, and there's this inscription in gold across the forehead there. And let's read about that in Exodus 28, verse 36. It says, make a plate of pure gold and engrave on it as its seal, holy to the Lord. That's your high priest, carrying you on his shoulders, having you on his heart, holy to the Lord. Okay? So, again, we look at the high priest, we go, okay, well, that's kind of interesting, but if we understand that he's a prefigure of Jesus, then that's gonna work. Now, what was the main thing the high priest did? The main thing the high priest did was to perform the ritual on the feast of Yom Kippur. So the high priest was the one anointed to make atonement for the people. That's his role. And that's, of course, his Jesus' role. Got it? So here's what the high priest did on the Day of Atonement, which came in either later September or early October. And so first of all, he would come up to the laver, which was in front of the tabernacle, and wash his hands and his face thoroughly, kind of symbolic of that whole cleansing. Then he would change into perfectly white linen clothes. Then he would lay his hands on a bull that he had paid for. He would lay his hands on a bull that he had paid for, representing putting his sins on that bull. Then he'd kill the bull, take the blood and kind of smear it all around the holy place. All right? And we're going to see in Hebrews, Jesus gets to skip that step. Right? Jesus skips that step. He doesn't have to do that step. All right. And then he'd fill a censer with incense, two handfuls of incense. That's a lot of incense. And then he lights it on fire, and he goes to the curtain, and he just sort of pulls the curtain back just a little bit and puts it in there, and it just, smoke fills the Holy of Holies. He only goes in there for a few minutes. He's not gone in there yet. He's getting ready because he's going to make atonement. All right, so first he made atonement for his own sin there in the holy place. And then by the time, he's going to do some other stuff with the goats and all that. By the time he goes in there, it's going to be smoke so thick you could barely see your hand in front of your face. That incense. Then he takes two goats. One he's going to kill. The other one's going to be the scapegoat. You ever heard of the term scapegoat? Guess where the term scapegoat comes from? It comes from the Bible. The scapegoat is the person that, like, you blame, you know, like, for example, I don't know, during the Watergate, what was his name? John Dean, they made him the scapegoat. Never mind, you have to be so old, you guys. All right, yeah, whatever. Just whatever, okay. So you select two goats, one of them you kill, and you also kill a bull. And then now the Holy of Holies is filled with incense. And then they tie a rope around his ankle because if he messes up, man, nobody's going to go in and take him back out because you die, you know. And he goes in with some of the blood from the goat and he puts it on the mercy seat. Remember that mercy seat to make atonement? And then he comes back out. He gets some of the blood for the bull. He goes in quickly, puts some blood around for that, and then he comes out. And he's made atonement. And then what he does is he goes up to the scapegoat called Azazel. I don't know why. I guess it means a scapegoat. And then what he does is he puts his hands on the scapegoat, representing putting all the sins of the people on the scapegoat. And then he goes out into the wilderness. This interesting ceremony. All right? But you ought to understand, this is telling us about what Jesus does for us. It's all about what Jesus does for us. So what we're going to do is we're going to switch to Hebrews. We're going to go to Hebrews. Okay, we learned a little bit about what Jesus does for us in the Old Testament. In fact, we learned quite a bit. But the actual high priest, Jesus the high priest, so much greater. We don't know what ephod, this is the real one. The one Jesus who's in the real Holy of Holies, the one in heaven. So I'm going to just read one verse in Hebrews 2, and then I'm going to go to Hebrews 4. We're going to spend pretty much the rest of our time in Hebrews chapter 4. Okay? So, again, the priesthood of Jesus is so much greater. Just like, remember, the sacrifice is much greater. And all these things, Jesus is so much greater. That's what the Hebrew writer tells us again and again and again. So Hebrews 2, 17. All right. Hebrews 2, 17. Again, talking about Jesus, our great high priest. It says, for this reason, Jesus, our high priest, had to be made like us, fully human in every way, in order that he might become a merciful and faithful high priest in service to God, that he might make atonement for the sins of the people. So that's why Jesus came. Well, Jesus came for more than one reason. You think he came to die for us, right? That's true. But we're not the only one who got changed because Jesus came here. Guess who else got changed because Jesus came here? Jesus was changed because he came here. That's what it's talking about. Because the job of a priest is to make intercession, to speak to God for human beings and to speak to human beings for God. And Jesus is great. What is a priest? I mentioned this briefly last week. A priest is a bridge builder. All right, so peons down here, that's y'all. God up there, all right? And the priest speaks for God to the people. And he speaks to the people for God and he speaks to God for the people, right? So he's a bridge. In fact, the Latin word is pontifex, which means bridge builder, mediator, advocate, representative, one who gives access. Now, there were bridges in the Old Testament, but they're kind of like this bridge here, right? They just didn't quite make the full connection. Right? So you had the high priest, and you know, he made some intercession and he gave them sort of outward cleanness so they could at least worship God. But no, no, no. Jesus is the perfect high priest, the one who's completed the bridge. In fact, the word complete or mature will be found when we go to Hebrews chapter 4. So let's go to Hebrews chapter 4. So basically then, the whole point of Hebrews 4 and what we already read briefly in Hebrews 2 is that Jesus is our perfect high priest because he gets us. Because he understands us. And why does he get us and understand us? Because he became like us. Starting in verse 14. Therefore, we have a great high priest. Folks, we have an awesome, incredible high priest. I mean, you know, the Urim and the Thummim and all that. To the Jews, it must have been really cool, this high priest, all this fancy turban and all this sort of stuff. That's nothing, man. We have such a great high priest who has ascended into heaven. Jesus, the Son of God. Let us hold firmly to the faith we profess. I don't want to cough on you there. Sorry, Zane.
No problem.
For we do not have a high priest who is unable to empathize with our weakness. But we have one who has been tempted in every way, just as we are, yet he did not sin. Let us then approach God's throne of grace with confidence, so we may receive mercy and find grace to help us in our time of need. Every high priest is selected from among the people and is appointed to represent the people in matters related to God, right? Intercessor. That's pontifex. Okay? He is able to deal gently with those who are ignorant and are going astray, since he himself is subject to weakness. That is why he had to offer sacrifices for his own sin, remember that, as well as for the sins of the people. And no one takes this honor on himself. He receives it when he's called by God, just as Aaron was, and just as all the high priests who ever lived were. In the same way, Christ did not take on himself the glory of becoming a high priest, but God said to him, you are my son. Today I become your father. And he says in another place, you are a priest forever in the order of Melchizedek. That's Jesus. That's our high priest. So what does a priest do? He makes intercession. He speaks to us for God and to God for us. So the ideal priest, it speaks human perfectly and speaks God perfectly. Now, the Levitical priest and the high priest, which one of those did they have down pretty well? They got the human stuff. They kind of got it, you know, but as far as understanding God, I'm sorry. I don't think they understood God particularly well. All right. Even before the incarnation, Jesus spoke the language of God. He had that down. He had it down. I mean, he was fluent in the God talk. But he was not fluent in humanity. Right? And so he didn't stay up there in this air-conditioned office. No, he left. He's like Moses. Moses, who was in the palace. Right? He had everything. The best food, the best clothing, everything. But he walked out of the palace. That's what Jesus did. Right? Yeah, he can relate to us, Hebrews 4:15. He makes intercession before God for us, Hebrews 4:16. And he offers things. So actually, this is interesting because if you read this whole section, he's there. Jesus, he's kind of like the high priest in a lot of ways. But in a lot of ways, he's way better than the high priest. For example, he tells us in verse 15 that the high priest can relate to us. He said, but Jesus, he can too. Says in verse 16 that the high priest makes intercession. You know, they kind of get the communication going between us and God. Well, Jesus does that. They offer gifts and sacrifices. Jesus does that, right? Chapter 5, verse 1. And they are selected by God from amongst men. That's the high priest. That's Jesus. And also in Hebrews 5:1, it says their job is to represent us to God. All right, Jesus It's kind of like that. But Jesus is greater than the high priest, according to this passage, in a few ways. Actually, in several ways. Number one, he's serving, in verse 14, in the heavenly tabernacle. The real one, the actual one, where God actually is. That's a lot better. All right, than in this little, you know, scale model thing that they had, the tabernacle. Number two, he was without sin, verse 15. That's better. If you had a choice between a perfect priest and a very imperfect priest, which would you pick? I'd pick a perfect one. That'd be a lot better. All right, number three, he didn't have to offer sacrifices for his own sin. So he gets straight to the goat and the bull, but doesn't do that first step there, right? Oh, even better, verse 6, he's a priest for how long?
Forever.
Because those high priests, they had this really bad habit. They just kept dying. You just get used to them, you know. They're doing a great job, and so, man, they die, they croak. All right? Oh, and then he's of the order of Melchizedek. All right? Don't have time for Melchizedek today. But one thing about Melchizedek, the order of Melchizedek, they're priests for Jews and Gentiles. Wow. The high priest only helped the Jews, didn't help the Gentiles at all.
Yeah.
But there's many other ways that Jesus is greater because he's of the order of Melchizedek. Now I want to focus in on verse 2. All right. Verse 15 first. That's right. I skipped a bunch of my notes. Oh my goodness. I skipped that whole section. Oh man. Hebrews 4:15. Let's read that. Reread that. There's a great word there. Verse 15. It says here, for we do not have a high priest who is unable to empathize with our weakness. No, Jesus can empathize. The word is sympatheo, which means feels the same. See, that's why Jesus came here. Oh, to offer sacrifice for us, by the way. That too. Yeah, that's right. That's pretty important. But also so that he could feel the same. Right? And why can he feel the same in verse 15? Because he was tempted in every way that we are. He knows what it's like to be ticked off at somebody. He knows what that's like. He knows what it's like to be tempted to lust. Jesus was tempted to lust? Yeah. Yeah. He knew what it was like every single temptation, the temptation to be lazy, or to drown his sorrows in some kind of drug or whatever it might be. That's why we can approach the throne of God with great confidence. Because he felt all those things. He was tempted in every way, but guess what? He never, ever gave in. He never sinned. So in verse 16 it says, we can approach the throne with great confidence. Great confidence. Oh yeah. Then there's Hebrews 5, verse 2. It says, he is able to deal gently with those who are ignorant and going astray. And who are those?
Us,
all right? Yeah. Since he is himself subject to weakness. Jesus was subject to weakness? Mm-hmm. Yeah. He got a cold. He probably sprained his ankle. Ooh. All right? He probably had, well, he didn't have cataracts. He wasn't old enough, but whatever it is, you know, all those things. He had empathy. The word there is, I think I might have the slide for this one as well. Okay, yeah, there it is. Metropatheia, which means sympathetic feeling, empathy. Jesus has empathy. He's not like some rich dude. Saying, you know, it's like yesterday we're out there, you know, there's this guy I was talking to for a while, and apparently he'd been hit by a truck. His back was broken in 5 places.
Wow.
He's in bad shape, man.
Right then or in the
people
back?
Get hit by cars.
If he'd hit by a truck, not that same day. I don't know when. And like, it's like, I can't even move. He's just standing there. He doesn't even have a tent. He just has this cloth. I could say to him, you know, I can really relate to you.
No.
Right, yeah. Really? I can really relate to you. I cannot relate to this guy at all. I've never been hungry. I've never had some kind of condition. The doctors don't do anything for him. His life basically is there. My life is over.
Wow.
Right? And so I come from my, this side of town, a nice house and, and all this sort of stuff. So yeah, I can relate to you. I can't relate to this guy at all. Jesus can relate to you, Garrick. Jesus can relate to you, Bianca, in every way. Have you ever felt God is just too far off, too distant to relate to you? Let's think about Jesus. Ever felt lonely? Jesus has that one covered. Ever tempted to lash out at somebody for hurting you? Oh, Jesus had that. Yep, definitely. Tired? Yep. Want to rest? Want to pull back from the spiritual battle? Jesus can definitely relate to that one. And therefore, he can explain you to the Father. That's what made him a perfect high priest. Again, he was not perfect. Before he came here, he was not perfect in the Greek sense of the word perfect, which means complete. What a great gift we have in our high priest, Jesus. Right? He deals gently with those who are ignorant and going astray, us. And again, that's that unintentional sin, especially with people with unintentional sin, because as we know, there is no sacrifice for intentional sin. Let's read verse 7 through 9. During the days of his life, on earth, he offered up prayers and petitions with fervent cries and tears to the one who could save him from death. And he was heard because of his reverent submission. Are we saying that God was submissive? Yeah. Yeah. He was. And the Garden of Gethsemane is a pretty good example of that, wouldn't you say? Son though he was, he learned obedience from what he suffered. Does that mean he was disobedient? No, he was never disobedient, but he learned what it meant to obey. He experienced those emotions that you experience when you're obeying and you don't even want to. So he learned, right? It says he learned obedience. What that means is he experienced it. Right? He experienced it. He became like us. Remember we read that in Hebrews 2:17? In every way. Pretty cool. And once made perfect. Now, Jesus, be careful quoting me here. Don't put this out on the internet, but Jesus was imperfect. Not in that he had sinned, but the word telios, is that up on the screen there? Telios. Right, which means perfect, as in complete, job done. Because he had to come here, and he had to live for a while among us and become the perfect high priest. Because remember, the Jewish high priest, they could get it, they kind of understand, but they were not doing so well up here. They really couldn't speak that language of God. But because Jesus came, he's both. He was made perfect, made mature, made complete through suffering. And therefore he has sympathy, same feeling. He has empathy. He gets it. He knows what it's like. He's not thinking, what's wrong with you? How could you think that? Jesus said, I definitely know why you think that. I thought the same thing. It's crazy. The Greek idea of God, this is so foreign to the ancient Greek idea of God, who was so distant and unknowable and all this sort of stuff, the Stoics and the Epicureans. This sympathetic God, the concept of a sympathetic God doesn't even match any ancient concept of God, even to the Jews, not really. All right? Once made perfect. Jesus, the great high priest. And then he's there in verse 10, designated to be the high priest in the order of Melchizedek. And I sure wish I had time to do Hebrews 7. And who knows? Maybe we'll throw in an extra sermon about the priesthood. Who knows? So let's review about Jesus, our great high priest. A lot of what we learned about Jesus, our great high priest, we learned about it from Leviticus, right? And Exodus. But Leviticus and Exodus doesn't tell the whole story, right? We have to come to Hebrews to kind of get why Jesus is such a great high priest. But we learned a few things we learned about the high priest Jesus from Leviticus. Like the fact that Jesus is a perfect, holy, undefiled high priest without blemish. That he is serving us, interceding for us, speaking for us, speaking to us, speaking for us, 24/7, 365, in the real, actual tabernacle in heaven. That he is without defect, without blemish, without sin. That he's clothed in majesty, the ephod and all this other stuff. Clothed in majesty with the people of God on his shoulders and on his heart. And that he's very wise. Those Urim and the Thummim things. An interesting thing. Alright? But then we come to Hebrews 2 and Hebrews 4 and 5 and we learn a few other things about what makes Jesus such a great, amazing high priest. Because he speaks God's language perfect, flawlessly. But he speaks our language perfectly, flawlessly. That's what made him a perfect high priest. He's able to sympathize, to understand and to feel what we feel. And he's a priest forever of the order of Melchizedek. That's Jesus, our great high priest. Okay, so we're going to have a song.
Focus our hearts and minds on the sacrifice that Jesus made for us.